Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Tony, let's go. Right now, the White Sox are beating the Twins 5-3, but it's not like that matters. The big story around the White Sox is that Michael Kopech is going to start tomorrow on the South Side. I will be in the house. I am not going to miss this. I expect the atmosphere will be as cool as it was last year when Yoan Moncada came up. So I will be there. I imagine Ryan McGuffey will be working in some capacity. He is a bona fide star when it comes to producing an Emmy Award-winning producer over at NBC Sports Chicago. And he's got the nice retrospective on Hawk Harrelson that's coming out, too. We can talk to him about that. He joins me now here on The Score. What's up, Guff?
What's going on, Lawrence, man? It's a good day to be a White Sox fan, right?
I know. You host the White Sox Talk podcast, and you guys brought in Rick Hahn to Reggie's. He's hanging out with you and mad about T-shirts and all sorts of other stuff with you guys. But before we talk about Kopech, the Hawk retrospective, is that done and when's it coming out?
Well, it's not done yet, but it's certainly it's been ingrained into my every second of every day schedule, and it will until September 6th when we premiered at the Arclight Cinema up in Lincoln Park. It's been a fun collaborative project with the White Sox. It's been the first time I've done anything kind of in conjunction with anybody else. And it's fun. We have like 15 to 20 hours of footage, so it's certainly been a challenge as to how to whittle that thing down into an hour and then figure out what we're going to do with all the other stuff. But I know Hawk is kind of probably one of the more polarizing figures in this town and across Major League Baseball, but you get a different in-depth look at who, kind of what makes this guy, you know, click on and in and out of the broadcast booth, so to speak. And we went to his hometown in Savannah, Georgia. We went to Boston with him. We went to Orlando. He spent some time with the family in Granger, Indiana. So we really, really went it's kind of like This Is Your Life, Hawk Harrelson.
That's dope. So September 6th,
September 6th, there's a premiere which you can, the White Sox, through White Sox Charities, they are selling, I believe, 50 pairs of tickets. So there's not very many. And there's a little bit of an opportunity to buy tickets to the premiere party. It'll be a Q&A with some of us, including Hawk, on that Thursday, as well as a chance to do like a meet and greet photo op with him. And then it premieres on NBC Sports Chicago on September 13th, in case if you can't get to the premiere, September 13th at 7 p.m.
That's dope, man. I'm really excited about that and all the stuff that you've put together. And you are the one that you made the investment, NBC Sports Chicago made the investment in making sure that you guys were really working on the prospects with the White Sox. You guys were going to Birmingham and you're going to Charlotte to learn about these guys. I know that we've talked about Michael Kopech before, but what should White Sox fans expect now that he's going to be called up to the major leagues?
Competitor, no doubt. I think the one thing about Kopech that I've learned in the time that I've gotten to know him is that he really doesn't want to finish second to anybody, and he wants to beat everyone he's facing if you're on the opposing team. And I think, and the other thing about him that really stands out is that he just wants to be great. He doesn't want to be good. He wants to be, I mean, he talks about the Hall of Fame. He talks about multiple Cy Youngs. And he says things that, you know, guys that have been in the league 6 to 10 years that have had perspective say. And he, you know, it's been well documented that he's gone through some adversity and stuff at a very early age, and he's kind of come out clean on the other side. And I think the trade to the White Sox organization certainly gave him kind of new life, a breath of fresh air. But the work this guy puts in, not just on the physical side, because we've seen the physical side, but mentally, in baseball, as you know, it's such a game of failure. What he's able to do with all the things that go into it, you know, a mental skills coach, and he's a big-time reader. He listens to, like, self-help podcasts. He's, you know, a very positive thinker. In ways that it's hard to really, you know, I'm 38 years old, he's 22, and I kind of, he's got me stopping and thinking about, man, maybe I should look into some of this stuff. So he's just, for a 22-year-old kid, he's kind of, it feels like he has a lot of experience and perspective. So you're getting kind of the whole package tomorrow night at the ballpark.
Are you surprised that they're bringing him up?
I'm not. I'm not surprised they're bringing him up because, you know, there's been so much talk about service time and stuff, and for the right reasons, and I think I understand that. But look, at some point, I mean, he's kind of really done everything the White Sox have wanted him to do. He's kind of stuck to their plan. He's struggled at AAA, and he's come out clean on the other side. And I mean, look what he's done those last seven starts. And I watched pretty intently that game on Thursday night in Charlotte against Louisville, and he was a man amongst boys that night. I mean, his off-speed stuff had guys guessing, knees were wobbling. The fastball's a fastball. I mean, most people aren't going to be able to catch up to it. But when you're throwing stuff off-speed that's breaking the way it was breaking, the changeup was just ugly on the in and outside corners of the plate. That was the first time I was, like, made a note to myself, like, man, Kopech was in complete command, complete control. You know, 3-2 counts 4 months ago weren't a good thing for him, and he just was finding a way to, you know, he was painting corners on 3-2 to guys the other night. So I'm not surprised because I think, you know, pitchers are a little bit different breed. You know, you don't know how many bullets you have left in those arms and or how many you get, I guess, before, like, so many guys get injured. And if you're talking about 6 or 7 years down the line, I think with the White Sox and Kopech, it was more about, you know, they needed, I think that they always wanted, and Rick said it today, they wanted to see him get to the major league level and see how some of this stuff plays this year. As long as he progressed the way they thought he would and actually faced some struggles. I think if he would have breezed through AAA, that would have been a little bit more interesting, and it seems kind of crazy to say that. But I think the fact that he kind of had some ups and some downs and then some ups again kind of makes it a no-brainer to have him up here this year. And look, the service time thing, that's, we can sit here and talk about that all night. Like, that's going to be something that will always be an issue. And so many people have talked about the White Sox and on Twitter and stuff have been like, oh, they're so cheap and this and that. It has nothing to do with about being cheap. It's about business. Vladimir Guerrero is hitting .400 for the Toronto Blue Jays organization. Why is he not up? It's the same reason. Everybody's doing this. Chris Bryant with the Cubs a few years ago. It's just smart business.
It's totally smart business. And I think people get it. But I think that you're right. I think that Kopech had gotten to a point where it would have – It was more likely that it would damage him to stay at AAA than help him. You know what I mean? Like he had gone past the point of mastering that level. And if you leave him down there, it's like, why am I still here? So nothing but bad habits could form down there. I think this is the right move, and I'm not surprised that they made it.
Yeah, and if you look at he's right at about his innings threshold in terms of like career high. So at this point, like, you want those, if you're going to go above your career high in innings, don't you want them to be meaningful innings, whether it's at AAA or the major league level? And at this point, all his last seven, what he's done since the All-Star break is just dominant. It's not even like, it's kind of video game stuff, you know, 59 strikeouts and 4 walks. I mean, come on. I mean, that's, you know, you're talking about like a 15-1 strikeout to walk ratio. So yeah, I think that this is the right move. And it's a no-brainer. And you know what? And quite frankly, they're not doing this to serve the White Sox fans, but it is certainly nice for the fan base to get a little bit of a cookie. You know, heading in tomorrow night, it's been a rough year, and there's been so much talk about, you know, Aloha and Kopech and Aloha, and for the right reasons. You want to be talking about the guys that are succeeding in the system. But it's certainly nice when you've had a tough year to have a night like tomorrow, and you brought up Moncada before it came on. You know, I remember that. I was there, and I remember the standing ovation for getting for the walk. And I expect tomorrow before the game, and when Kopech takes them out, I expect it to be I think it might even be a little more electric, to be honest with you, because there's so much excitement, and it's kind of like another step of where this rebuild is.
No, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Is there going to be a special White Sox Talk podcast?
Oh, you know it. I mean, we put one out last night. We put one out last night, like just as a you had to have a reaction to it. And then, you know, tomorrow, unfortunately for us, the game is not on our air. And that's one of the when you don't have all 162, it makes it a little tough pill to swallow. WGN has the game, and it's one of those things. We have 107 games that you kind of feel like you rolled out the red carpet and somebody else is kind of, you know, using your house for the party. And that's no disrespect to the WGN, because they're going to do a great job tomorrow. But we do have a lot of special programming and a plan laid out. We're doing a pregame show with Layla and Brian Anderson from the park tomorrow that can be streamed on NBCSportsChicago.com and as well as Facebook. We're going to do postgame coverage within In the Loop. So we're going to have plenty on our social media channels. We have a whole plan that's laid out that starts at 12:01, just after midnight at 12:01 tonight. We are starting a Kopech Day plan. So it's good stuff.
Oh, my man. Well, thanks for jumping on the show. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to Hawk when that comes out on September 13th. And I'm looking forward to seeing you around campus.
All right, brother. Always good to come on with you, Lawrence.
It's Ryan McGuffey from NBC Sports Chicago. If you're a White Sox fan, his podcast is pretty dope. He and Chuck Garfine do the White Sox Talk podcast, and they're on it. They get great guests. They do really good content. We're going to take a break. We'll talk about the Cubs. I got to get Bruce Levine's thoughts on Yu Darvish, because he was in South Bend to watch Darvish. We'll do that next here on The Score. Lawrence Olmstead with you until 10 o'clock. There's so much news going on in the world of Chicago sports, but maybe the biggest news item is the fact that Yu Darvish struggled again in a rehabilitation start down in South Bend. Our guy, Bruce Levine, who covers baseball, is all over it. Follow him on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. Bruce, thanks for joining me tonight.
Always a pleasure, Lawrence, and it was an interesting day in South Bend yesterday. My second time there, the other time was June 25th when he decided to throw his first rehab, got through that in 57 pitches, five innings, had everything going that day. And then when we asked him how far he's going to go with that particular start, he said, I'm not so sure, you know, not quite sure how I feel at this point, and we know the rest. 4 days later, he had a shot, a cortisone shot. Was shut down for a month and a half, didn't start coming back until about 2 weeks ago, and now after 19 pitches yesterday in the mound in South Bend, it appears another rehab is going to be out of the question for at least a while. We'll find out here in the next day or so what the MRI said. We'll have to find out the consultation between Darvish, the medical staff, the training staff, Epstein, Hoyer, and Joe Maddon, and then we'll move on. But the likelihood of him pitching this year has certainly been diminished.
Bruce, I was sitting right next to you as Yu Darvish was throwing his sim game last week, and it looked like things were moving in the right direction. When it comes to him saying that he's feeling something that maybe they're not seeing on the MRI, how are the Cubs responding to that?
Well, I mean, they externally, they respond in full support of, we can't crawl into this guy's body. We have to believe everything he says. Why wouldn't he want to pitch for us? Why wouldn't he want to come out and perform? His body of work tells you that he's a potential ace. He worked hard to come back from Tommy John surgery 3 years ago, threw 175 innings last year, shut the Cubs down, and made them look sick in the NLCS at Wrigley Field, and signed the $126 million six-year deal. I don't know where people would ever say this guy doesn't want to pitch. Now, that said, I can understand people saying, Yu Darvish doesn't want to pitch until he feels 100%. Okay, I can understand it on the Darvish side. I can understand the disdain for that comment if it's true on the other side. So, again, questioning whether a guy is hurt or not, it's an impossibility. Nobody should be able to do that because you can't climb into a guy's body. Now, as to how much pain a certain individual can pitch with or want to pitch with, that's another story, but only they can tell you that.
Bruce, have you ever seen a story like this with a baseball player?
Where people question whether he wanted to pitch or not?
No, where you have this kind of back and forth where, you know, the guy is telling you something's still not quite right, and the team wants to try and get the player back, but something's holding them back that they can't necessarily see.
Well, I mean, I'm sure it's happened dozens, hundreds of times in baseball history, in particular the last 25 or 30 years of free agency. I can tell you, I can answer it this way, Lawrence. Every pitcher pitches with something hurting in his arm, in particular after the first, 15 or 20 starts of a season. And also, the pitchers before free agency would never tell anybody there was something wrong with their arm, because that meant that they were not put on the DL. They were sent to the minor leagues, okay? This guy's got a bad arm. We're sending him to the minor leagues. He can't help us. We're sending him to the minor leagues. So it was a different day in baseball. I've had countless guys who pitched in the 50s, 60s, 70s tell me that they would never tell a manager that they weren't feeling well. They would just pitch through it and get their brains beat in, sometimes eventually put in the bullpen, pitch out of there, sometimes eventually sent to the minor leagues. But in this day and age, it's all about protecting those arms, protecting your investment, and the individual player making sure that he can go out there and pitch. So I can't give you an isolated version of what has happened with Yu Darvish. I can only tell you that watching guys like Carlos Rodon come back over 2 years and have similar shoulder injury 2 years in a row, and the frustration that he went through, the frustration that the White Sox went through with him, and now to watch him pitch as one of the dominant pitchers in the American League, that's an example that I don't think you question a guy's fortitude. You don't question his desire. You have to go along with the guy, and until proven otherwise, and I don't know how you do that, you just can't say the guy doesn't want to pitch for you. I mean, all the perceptions in the world might give you that idea. Everybody might be second-guessing you and, gnashing their teeth about the fact that you're not out there, but it's just not a fair thing to do.
Talking with our MLB insider, Bruce Levine, here on The Score about the Cubs and Yu Darvish. Bruce, there's a difference between hope and expectation. Where were the Cubs on hoping that Darvish would be back versus their expectation that he'd be back?
Well, I would say it was 50-50. Again, because he has been hurt and injured, and because even during the rehab, and you remember this, Lawrence, 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, he said, "I was throwing and the arm hurt horribly for 10 pitches. And then all of a sudden I straightened my back. They've done some manipulation, and it started to feel good." So he described what the chiropractor did to help him learn how to manipulate his back, and therefore the arm angle somehow allowed him to pitch pain-free. But, Lawrence, I don't think we've heard from him on any long period of time that he felt he was pain-free. I think there's always been the assumption here that there's something wrong and that he is trying to pitch through it. And I think that's the case again when he got scared yesterday, when he felt the same feeling in his elbow that he felt in South Bend in the end of June. So he shut it down. I just don't know if you can just come back and tell them, you know what, I'm okay, let's do it again. I mean, that would be a long shot if we heard that Darvish, after the MRI clears him, or if it clears him, said, "I'm going back out there on the mound tomorrow, and we're going to do this over again." I just don't see that happening. I don't think the Cubs will let him do that because of the fact that they have 5 more years invested in this guy. You know, this year's a disappointment for everybody involved, including Darvish. But with your investment, you let him possibly go out there and blow out. I mean, you know, another Tommy John right now. Let's say he has Tommy John surgery 2 weeks from now, Lawrence, okay? So he's out for the entire 2019 season, and you know, you see him in spring training in 2020. That would be the scenario of if he has something wrong that he has to have Tommy John again. We've jumped way ahead of ourselves from a bad feeling in his arm after a couple pizz to Tommy John, yet all these things have to be explored. You have to talk about all of them.
Well, I'm wondering now, with the Cubs, is there even enough time at this point to get him to a point where the Cubs would feel confident putting him out there in a playoff game? Because that's ultimately what we're talking about for this season. Not, you know, him necessarily pitching in September without it being about him pitching in September to build up to him pitching in October.
Lawrence, he threw 94 pitches on May the 20th. That was his only win of the season. In that game, he threw 39 pitches in the first inning, looked like he was going to have to come out, and was tremendously economical from that point on, throwing, 55 pitches or something like that the rest of the way for the next five innings. That was his only win of the year. There's never been a point in time this year where he looked like Yu Darvish. He's had three good outings out of eight, okay? Three. Two against Milwaukee, that one on May 20th against Cincinnati. Afterwards, you know, he came up hurt. So from everything, you know, involved here, we don't know if Darvish has been healthy all year long. We saw him in spring training, and you were down there with me. I don't know if you saw any of his outings. You might have seen one. He looked great. He looked great in South Bend on June 25th. All of his pitches, everything looked good. The last pitch he threw on the mound yesterday, pitch number 19 at the end of the first inning, was a swinging strike three. It was 95 miles an hour. So, you know, again, I can't tell you this guy has been himself all year long because we haven't seen consistent Yu Darvish pitching from him since he's been a Cub.
Bruce, what's the latest on Chris Bryant?
Well, he's supposed to take BP. I think it's going to be tomorrow or Wednesday in Detroit, and it'll be his first BP since he went on the DL, and they've been trying to get that shoulder or labrum, as it was said by Theo Epstein last week on our midday show, I believe. And he's going to try to swing and see if he can pull through it. You know, Epstein, you know, talked about the fact that Bryant believes he can get back there. The Cubs believe he can get back there. But he said he can't rule out for sure that something won't be done after the season. So from all of that, you know, I think Chris has rested here since, July 24th, I think, was the last time he played. So we're almost exactly at a month. I think when he hits, it'll probably be exactly a month when he starts swinging in Detroit. And it's probably going to take another 10 days to 2 weeks to rehab, I would say. He's got to swing in the cage for a while. He's probably got to go out on a rehab assignment if they're still playing minor league baseball, or go to Arizona and rehab it in a Arizona, you know, instructional game of some sort. But he can't just come back and play. I know he's kept the rest of his body in good shape, but, you know, the swinging factor, you know, it's going to take a while. So even if it's great on Wednesday, I think it's at least another week or 10 days.
How important has that acquisition of Cole Hamels been because of everything else that's gone on?
Well, I mean, it's just been unbelievable. You know, people can rap Epstein and Hoyer for the fact that Darvish hasn't worked out and Chetwood hasn't worked out. But it's not like they sat on their hands and said, what can we do? We spent all our money. We tried everything. We're not going to do anything. No, they went out. They got bullpen guys. They got three or four veteran bullpen guys for this run. They went out and they got Hamels. And Hamels has been outstanding. Nobody knew he was going to be this good. We don't know if it'll continue this way. But the one thing they did their homework, both with the metrics and with the eye test, that this guy was throwing harder at that time of the year where their scouts were looking at him than he was early in the year. So they knew his arm was in great shape, and they knew that probably being the veteran he was and being rejuvenated by going to a team that had a chance to win, that they were going to get something really good out of him. So if you want to chastise Epstein and Hoyer for the things that haven't worked out, how about concentrating on what they've done to repair this team and keep it afloat?
No doubt about it. I want to ask you a question that you asked me in the Wrigley press box last week. Which team concerns you more, the Brewers or the Cardinals?
Well, the Cardinals, because they pitch. And they have dynamic young arms. They're getting Waka back now. They had at one point 10 days ago, Lawrence, their entire rotation from Memphis, their Triple-A team, in the major leagues. All of them are hard throwers. All of them are young guys. The Cardinals, they just did a complete 180. They traded away Tommy Pham. They fired their manager, and Dexter Fowler went on the DL. And all of a sudden, it's a different Cardinal team, rejuvenated, full of you-know-what and vinegar all the way. And they are a scary team. They're the hottest team in baseball right now, to go along with the Oakland A's. And they are the team that scares me the most. Why? Because they can pitch every night. And if you can pitch every night, that means you can win with two or three runs. And that's going to be the key going down to the end.
The series with the Pirates between the Cubs was historic because I guess it was the first time since 1958 that two teams in a four-game series had combined for 9 runs. What's wrong with the Cubs' offense?
Chris Bryant's not in it. And at some point in the season, you're not going to get through the major league season with having a 6-WAR player not in the lineup for you for 4 or 5 weeks. Now, his first time he was on the DL 12 days. Now he's been on the DL almost 30. That's an awful long time to be doing without one of the more dynamic hitters in the game. Not only that, Lawrence, but think about this, and you've heard it before. When a team is preparing for another team, they're going through the lineup. The pitcher and catcher and pitching coach have a meeting before each game. And without that name, Chris Bryant, in the lineup, it's a totally different feel for that pitcher, catcher, and pitching coach that day. So regardless of what type of season he was having or what he was bringing at the point where he went on the DL, it's Chris F. Bryant, okay? And that means you have to be prepared for somebody that can dominate you and beat you either with his glove, his legs, or his bat on a given day. So that's the impact of the lineup. They had to put Rizzo at the top of the order to get him going. That means you didn't have impact bats to drive in runs. The guys that were supposed to drive in runs other than Bryant and Rizzo were just, okay, we hope that Schwarber drives in runs. We hope that Happ drives in runs. We hope that Contreras drives in runs. They should. They all hit 20 home runs last year. They look like they're on the uptick. But we know Bryant's going to do it. We know Rizzo's going to do it. And what has been missing there? Rizzo is leading off. Bryant's out of the lineup. And you have a middle of the order that just is not reliable on a daily night or day to drive in runs. And I think it's as simple as that.
I've been looking a lot at Contreras over the last few games, and I'm starting to wonder because historically, over the last 20 years, that position, it ends up kind of ruining guys from an offensive standpoint. Are we seeing the grind of catching affect the offense of Wilson Contreras, in your opinion?
I don't know that. This is a big, strong guy. We haven't seen the home run stroke. We haven't seen the extra base hit pop from the get-go, right? And that's since the beginning of the year. I mean, he had one hot streak for 10 days, right? And I think he hit a bunch of home runs and drove in some runs. Other than that, we haven't seen the same Wilson Contreras. And the reason I thought he was going to be the MVP of the league this year was that he missed a month last year. He hit 21 home runs. He drove in 76 runs. And, projected out, he was going to get a lot of MVP votes last year. A catcher that hits 25 and drives in 90, the guy that with a rocket for an arm that catches a top staff in the league, that's an MVP candidate. And for some reason, the power hasn't been there. The barreling of the ball hasn't been there. It's not the same guy. He's done the job as a catcher. He's improved back there. I think tremendously improved, because you don't see him jumping up and down as much, going out to the mound as often as you did last year. He's quieter back there, which was what all the starting pitchers wanted from Wilson Contreras. So he's an all-star catcher. He was the all-star starter for the National League. But meeting expectations as far as his offense, he's fallen pretty well short.
Bruce, I appreciate the time. I'll see you at the ballpark this week.
Lawrence, pleasure. Take care.
That's Bruce Levine, our MLB insider, talking with him about what's going on with the Cubs. And if you'd like to react, 312-644-6767. My name is Lawrence Holmes, and you're listening to The Score.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Start celebrating the Chicago Wolves' 25th anniversary season early by visiting the larger-than-life Chicago Wolves goalie mask located up and down Michigan Avenue. Encircle your calendar for the Wolves' home opener at Allstate Arena on October 13th. Gordon Wittenmeyer of the Sun-Times just posted this story on Twitter with the headline, "With MRI results pending, Cubs teammates eye long-term value of Yu Darvish." And he goes into what's gone on, how we've gotten to this point with Darvish, and then has some quotes from the teammates of one Yu Darvish, like this one. "Hopefully he has the MRI and he won't have any damage," pitcher Jose Quintana said. "I saw him the last 2 weeks and he was really excited and happy," close quote. Anthony Rizzo said this: "It stinks for him." Joe Maddon said, "I was looking forward to it. I can't deny that. But my minor league training has taught me you've got to go out there with the guys you've got. When the cavalry shows up, you utilize them," close quote. Does that sound like a manager who's expecting Yu Darvish to be available to him in the playoffs? I don't think so. Kyle Schwarber went into depth and said this: "He's obviously going to be a big part of this team. We just need him to get healthy. I know it's hard to say. We're in the stretch run right now, but there's a long-term thing here where this guy's going to have to help us for another 5 years. So we want him to get better and we want him to feel like he's healthy, where he can come back and help us win ball games," close quote. So that's what the guys in that clubhouse are saying about Yu Darvish. They can't wait on him. Like, I mean, they can't even expect that he's going to be a part of this thing. Nor should they. The other issue, and we talked a little bit about it, me and Bruce did, about Chris Bryant. I think Bruce is on to something. Look, I'm all for the boat guy. David Bote has been really tremendous until this past week. Like, all the way up to winning the game on Sunday Night Baseball. But Chris Bryant is an MVP, and it's hard to play at or replace an MVP in your lineup. Now, it'd be different if the rest of the guys that people think, myself included, have MVP potential were playing offensively at an MVP level. Baez has held up his end of the bargain throughout the year. He will finish in the top 10 for National League Most Valuable Player. Why are you looking at me crazy, Tony?
Don't disrespect that. He's going to win MVP. Let's go.
Maybe. I'm just saying that he will finish in the top 10. For maybe top five. I actually think top five, but I'm hedging a little bit. He'll finish in the top 10 for MVP in the National League. But Contreras hasn't offensively been, I thought that he would take the next step. And I do think there's something to playing that position. And playing that position as much, is catching as many games as he's caught and being as athletic as he is and all the things, I think it wears you down. There's a reason Joe Mauer doesn't catch anymore. Addison Russell has had like spasms of it throughout the season, but there's still those moments like the game Sunday where you're like, oh, that's a base running mistake or that's a throw in the dirt. And he's not hitting the way that people kind of expected him to hit. I feel like, and I said this earlier in the year, that like he kind of is what he is offensively. I think that we're close to his ceiling. Like his real ceiling, not his projected ceiling. But that doesn't mean he's not valuable to your team. I mean, he plays tremendous defense. And Anthony Rizzo, overall, he's gotten himself kind of back to normal, but there was a long stretch of time where he wasn't right. And now, you know, Chris Bryant's just gone. Now he's supposed to start hitting soon, go out and get some work in, and then hopefully he'll be back. But I'm concerned that that's a guy who's playing through something. And if he's playing through something, that could mean that you're going to get a lesser version of him. And like I was talking about earlier, I love the way that this is how it feels for September baseball. That there's a real race on in the National League Central now. And it went from a two-team race to a three-team race like that. All of a sudden, the big bad Cardinals are back. It's kind of fun that they're back. And we'll see what the Cubs do. A texter's like, is there anyone rent a pitcher? You're going to rent a pitcher to do what? You're 10 days away from adding guys now. You've kind of made it through the hard part. You're 10 days away from expanded rosters. Sure, I guess if they wanted to trade for James Shields, fine. Or whom a James Shields type. Fine, do it. But your roster's getting ready to expand. You can add as many arms to that bullpen and maybe make it so the position pitchers don't have to pitch in blowout games. I feel like whatever's going to happen with the Cubs rotation has to happen with the Cubs. They made a move. They made a move and picked up a whole bunch of salary. If they don't want to pay the buyout. I'm still trying to find out what the language is on that. Like how much the Rangers pay if the Cubs want to buy. I feel like that buyout goes to the Cubs. That they would buy out Hamels at $6 million. He's been your best pitcher for the last month, though. Is he 34? We find out he's 34 years old. But it might just have to be we've got Hamels and Lester and Hendricks and Quintana, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, Cole Hamels, 34, turns 35 in December.
And 2 years left on his deal, but a $6 million buyout. So like $40 million for the next 2 years with Cole Hamels. But a $6 million buyout if they want to get rid of him at the end of the year. I don't know if you're in a position to, but whatever. We'll worry about that when we get there. For now, it's can we put together a rotational that can be competitive in the playoffs? And God forbid you end up in the wild card game. Then I don't know what you bullpen the hell out of it and then figure out that's what Joe's going to do.
I got it, but which one of these teams going to catch him?
You don't think the Cardinals can catch him?
No.
Why not?
They had to get hotter than crap to get four games behind them.
But here they are.
Yeah, and so they got to still be this hot.
And they still have games left with the Cubs.
Yeah, three at the end.
What about the Brewers?
They just smoked at that game.
What about the Brewers?
They got like six or seven with the Cubs.
How many games back are they?
3.5. I'm good. This is fool's gold. Brewers are garbage.
I think the Cubs are going to win the division. All I'm saying is that it's definitely possible that they end up in a wild card game.
Herb's got this narrative on the Brewers where he just does not believe them, no matter what they do. It's weird.
I'm kind of with Herb on that. And I'm kind of like, they were presented with two opportunities to step the bleep up. And they didn't do it. They had a chance last year, and they had a chance this year. And they didn't do it. And they're going to pay for it. I told Rami this when I was on in Milwaukee. 5 years from now, we're going to be talking about the Brewers of 2016, 2017, 2018, and be like, man, they had a chance. And you blew it!
This is their chance. They won tonight. They have a chance versus the Reds, the Pirates, the Reds, the Nationals.
Watch the Reds get them.
Reds will be getting the Cubs.
That's also true. They're coming up this week. I have pregame. This segment brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. Big day for me tomorrow. No show, but I am going to drop a new episode of the House of L podcast. Sarah Spain is the guest for this week, and it's really good. I'm also going to go home and take a short nap, or I guess a long nap. And then I will be doing sports over at Channel 9 in the morning. Robin and Larry and Paul and Sarah Gendra. Shout out to Lauren Jiggets. Hung out with her today. Good peoples.
Afia?
Yeah, she all right. Mad at her. Now Brooke is her best friend. Now you hung out with...
Who's Brooke?
Brooke Weisbrot. We hung out with her for like a half a minute, and now that's your best friend. Okay. Who took you to the emergency room, though? This guy. It's fine. I can find new best friends, too. Damn it. So tomorrow morning, starting at 6:15 on Channel 9, I'll be on Cubs pre and post on Thursday, and then we'll be back here doing our thing Friday night. Julie DeCaro is coming up next. Please show her the same love you showed me. I heard that Brad Evans is going to be on her show. And he's going to be loud. Have a great rest of your night. It's good to be back. Talk to you on Friday. Check me out on Channel 9 tomorrow in the morning. Peace.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.